prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we review underseen horror movies, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
And I'm Lance.
So before we get into the movie that we're covering this episode, we got a message from the director of The Passing on Facebook.
We did, and it was quite exciting for me. Yeah, from John Huckert himself, he messaged us. He listened to our podcast about The Passing, and he, quote, loved it.
Yes.
So he did want to let us know that he does still live in that haunted house in L.A., because I'd mentioned that I wasn't sure if he still lived there in the episode. He still lives there. And he also wanted to provide exactly where we could purchase the book, which as soon as I saw the link, I clicked on it and ordered it.
So of course you did.
I was hoping to get it before this podcast, before this recording, but Should be here this week. But yeah, Ghost Rider, The Polaroid Ghost and Other True Tales of the Paranormal by John Augustine. It is available at ghostpolaroids.com. Pretty straightforward. he said that the book just came out a few months ago. There was an earlier version that Joe did, the author Joe, as a test. But this is the final version. And he said that there are over 150 of the Polaroids pictures in there that have never been released to the world. So I'm excited to get a hold of it. He did say it's for believers and skeptics. I think he was pointing you out.
He was definitely pointing the finger at me.
I will definitely have a follow-up on that book when I get it. He also pointed out that there's a show on Netflix called Surviving Death that has a segment on his whole haunted house thing. If anybody wants to seek that out, I haven't yet, but I am. He said episode 5 of that series is about his house, I guess.
Okay. I'm going to put a link to where you can buy the book I'll update the show notes on The Passing episode. I'll add the link to
that
one.
Yeah, so Let's get it on that bestsellers list, everybody. Another thing he pointed out was that The Passing was actually his second feature film. His first was called Orange Sunshine, The Reincarnation of Ludwig von Beethoven. I couldn't find anything about this film online, even when I Googled the title. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel bad that I didn't do like my deep dive research, but I just did not see it out there. So hopefully it gets released.
We have a direct line to the director now, so maybe
I should ask for a copy.
Yes.
Be like, hey, man, you got like a burn DVD out there. I'm interested to see it because I have watched all his other stuff. But yeah, I did want to just point out a few things he did say that. So when he talked about his first film, he did say, honestly, the whole thing has been quite a surprise. I figured most of my work was gone forever and would never be heard from again. But for some reason, there is renewed interest since Vinegar Syndrome, God bless them, rescued the barely surviving elements. And then he said, I'm going on and on here, but thank you for doing the podcast. It was really enjoyable to listen to. He said, we really did our homework. Great fun and amazingly thorough. I mean, I totally made my day when I watched it, when I read this. Yeah. So thank you, John. If you, for some reason, listened to this episode,
maybe.
we really appreciate that. And maybe we should get him on for like an episode.
When we do a ghost movie.
Oh, that's good. There's got to be a movie out there. Anybody who has seen like a ghost or any type of haunted
house? I have plenty of like random Hong Kong ghost movies.
Yeah, but I want specifically where there's like a picture of a ghost.
Okay.
Because that is like, I'll be like, John, is this real? Is this photo real? Can you tell us if this is actually real or not? But yeah, no. More to come when I get that book, Ghost Rider, in, because I'm excited to get it.
Lance is going to start his own like side podcast about that. Paranormal haunting.
You know what? Maybe John and I will start it.
There you go.
He did say if you have any follow-up questions or anything like that, you know, message away. So I feel like we're kind of best friends at this point. So if anybody has any questions they want me to ask John, I could shoot him a text. Just let me know.
But seriously, thank you, John, for messaging us and letting us know you liked it. It's, you know, we love hearing from people when they listen that they like it, but it especially means something coming from the director themselves.
Yeah, big time.
Because we're not covering a lot of movies where the directors are still alive. So, I mean, you don't get that many opportunities. So.
That's true. That's it was a cool surprise.
Yeah. Sure. Or who speak the same language. Because, you know, I'm always dipping into Italy because I love it.
Yeah, and you know me and my Swedish horror films. Yeah. So,
but speaking of Italy, we got to get into our movie for this episode,
yes.
Which is The Spider Labyrinth from 1988. This is available to watch on YouTube, and as of this recording, has 578 views on Letterboxd.
I am the urn that belongs to the weavers. The great cobweb is closing every passage. It's a labyrinth with no way out.
We're studying an ancient religion. Different peoples on opposite sides of the world who worship the same gods.
Doesn't sound like a very interesting subject.
They're invading my mind. I can't go on.
Put it away quickly. This affair is extremely dangerous.
You have to understand how important it is.
Alan.
Genevieve? That's her name.
No one must ever know. The names of the gods must never be revealed. You have been chosen, Alan.
So, quick summary of the film. In America, a company who are working on an international project called Intextus have lost touch with a Professor Roth in Budapest. So they send Professor Whitmore out to Hungary to find out what's going on. Upon his arrival, he's driven to Roth's house by his assistant, only to be warned by Roth's wife that he has been acting strangely. Roth himself does appear to be uneasy, and when he's alone with Whitmore, gives him some notes and Polaroid photographs. So you got me all like
Polaroids.
Photographs and tells him to meet him later that evening. Whitmore then goes to his hotel full of strange residents who continually stare at Whitmore. Once he goes back to Roth, he finds the man murdered hanging from a ceiling by cobwebs and discovers that he never had a wife in the first place. The local policeman takes Whitmore's passport, so he's now stranded in Budapest. So Whitmore decides to do a bit of investigating, and this leads to people trying to warn him off, him getting lost in Budapest quite a bit, and a strange creature and cult at the center of it all. So The Spider Labyrinth was directed by Gianfranco Giogni. This is his first and one of only two narrative features that he directed out of his 12 directing credits, which include mostly TV series and documentary films. His most recent documentary was actually about the boom of headings about love problems in women's magazines in the 50s.
Oh.
So like, how to stay sexy after vacuuming all day. I don't know. I'm just guessing what the headlines were in the 50s. I'm sure they were pretty funny though.
Yeah.
This movie actually had four screenwriters: Gianfranco Manfredi, Tonino Cervi, Cesare Fregoni, and Riccardo Aragno. Fregoni has the most writing credits out of all of them. Those include Martino's Mountain of the Cannibal God, Island of the Fishman, and The Great Alligator, as well as Diodato's Cut and Run, Fulci's New Gladiators, and Bava's Rabid Dogs.
Nice. Those are good.
Yeah. And then this was edited by a name I'm used to seeing pop up quite a bit, Sergio Montanari. He edited Django, Revolver, your favorite, Cotsies, Paganini Horror, Hercules, and Star Crash.
Oh, yeah. That's, I mean, the best part of that was editing.
The score was by Franco Piersanti, and I really didn't see anything else on his credits that I've seen. Lance, impressions on as far as the score went?
Yeah, because I looked him up too, and this was like the only obvious horror movie that he did. Everything else looked like, I don't know, maybe dramas. I didn't really click through.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was really good. I mean, there's one scene that we'll probably talk about where it like showcases his original score for like 5 full minutes. Mm-hmm. And there's another scene, when you mentioned in the summary, when Professor Roth is hanged, there's this like, it's like the cello and the violin bows are just holding a note and going super slow. Yeah. Great buildup, extremely tense. But yeah, I mean, I heard a lot of horror element, you know, horror soundtrack and horror score elements in here. So I was a little surprised looking over at his other films.
Yeah. Oh, well. The crew here is pretty thin as far as like referencing other stuff that they've worked on and this like huge body of work is at least in the horror genre.
Right.
But I do think sort of the standout crew member on this is the special effects and animatronics.
For sure.
Which were done by Sergio Stivaletti. So he did work on Suave's Cemetery Man, The Church, and The Sect. A lot of later Argento movies, The Card Player, Do You Like Hitchcock, Opera, Mother of Tears.
Thumbs up.
No. Phantom of the Opera and Dracula 3D, which I still haven't seen the last two.
I haven't seen those either.
I might have to do that this October for some reason.
Let's do it.
They're on my shelf too.
But really? You own them?
Yeah. Because I can't help myself. I'm like, it's Argento.
I just picked up Sleepless, which I haven't watched yet.
Yeah.
But you know me, I do like, I mean, it's not as good, obviously, but later Argento's, it's just fun and it's weird. But that's cool. Yeah, I didn't see the special effects guy had all those.
I'm not even done yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Demons and Demons 2 and Demons 5, aka The Mask of Satan. Miami Gollum, which I watched, I want to say earlier this year or late last year. And the last 15 minutes of that movie, very reminiscent of Cotsy's The Black Cat. I'm just going to say that. The rest of the movie is not good. But the last 15 minutes are worth watching.
Nice.
And then he also, so we saw The Wax Mask at Taps and Tapes.
Yeah, Vulcan.
The Fulci Argento written. And he's actually one of the people who stepped in when they didn't go through and direct it. So yeah, he directed that after neither of them did.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The Wax Mask is...
It's special.
It is. And it's, it's like, you know, later Argento. I mean, it's
got your favorite though. Digital Blood.
It does have a lot of that. I mean, so the special effects, you know, this guy is legit first off with all his movies that he's done. Demon, especially Demons and Demons 2, which has some of the best practical effects that still creep me out.
Yeah.
And then you threw The Wax Mask out there.
I mean, I had to, cause I needed you. You sent a tweet not too long ago. Like, I miss Vulcan Video. I'm like, God, fuck you, Lance. Come on, stop it. You're just making everybody sad. So I'm throwing it back in your face. Be like, hey, Lance, remember when we got to go to like Vulcan Video and watch VHS tapes or like 16 millimeter?
Yeah, no, it's a great memory. I mean, my friend Austin was there.
He was.
But the more I think about Wax Mask, the more I want to watch it again.
All right.
And I think it is, it might have been added to some, it was added recently to some streaming.
Okay.
But
is it under 1,000?
Oh, no, I'm sure it's well over.
Okay.
Fine. Anything with like Argento's name seems to be kind of
you think
way
so?
Up there.
I don't know.
I mean, hopefully like Phantom of the Opera or Dracula 3D or whatever.
We're not covering those cover. I'm saying like for Horror Gives Back, I'll watch those.
Well, I mean, if they're under 1,000, we might cover those.
Oh, that's,
and I don't think they are at all because it's Argento's name.
All right.
I think I did look up Wax Mask once and I think it had a surprisingly high amount of like 6,000 or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's just me guessing.
Yeah. All right. But Stivaletti is still alive and working. His last credit was just in 2019. Well, maybe not still working, but, you know, COVID pandemic probably put everyone's work on hold. So when I don't see someone working in 2020, I just assume it was because of that. But
yeah,
anyway, he's
that's
still
awesome.
Alive.
Cool. But yeah, well, maybe he'll work on the new Argento that he's doing.
Yeah. And then the last thing I did want to point out, though, with special effects is that the assistant, and I don't normally dive like this deep into it, but I thought it was interesting because the assistant was Barbara Morissetti, so a woman.
Nice.
She did the effects and makeup for our assistant effects and makeup on Demons 2, Cemetery Man, and then she did just makeup on The Church, The Sect, Opera, Phenomena, many others. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, there you go.
Good credit.
So the list of actors, again, it's pretty short here because we don't have a very familiar cast here. First is Roland Wybenga. He plays Professor Alan Whitmore, and he's in Lance's favorite movie ever, Luigi Cozzi's Sinbad.
He is. Yeah. I noticed that. He only had a few credits, but this guy's like super dreamy. Like he's like an Italian Henry Cavill.
He's pretty sexy.
Yeah. So I was surprised I kind of was looking around. I thought maybe he died at a young age, maybe. But I liked him.
Yeah, I did.
It was very Italian horror.
Very perfect. Academic character looking thing. Yeah. So
he's also good in Sinbad.
A few of the female casts in this, Genevieve Weiss is played by Paola Rinaldi. She is basically the assistant / love interest. Mm-hmm. Margareta von Krauss is Celia Roth, or the fake wife. And then Claudia Muzzi is Maria, the maid. And we'll get to her later because she dies spectacularly.
Yeah, there's some good kill scenes.
Yeah. In this. And then finally, William Berger he's credited as Mysterious Man, but I'm just going to call him Exposition Homeless Man in the movie.
Oh yeah. He doesn't have a name in there.
No, he doesn't get a name in there at all. He's literally credited on both IMDb and Letterboxd as Mysterious Man.
Okay.
So yeah, he's Exposition Homeless Man. So he is in Kioma, Five Dolls for an August Moon, Face to Face, Top Line with Franco Nero, My Dear Killer. And actually a couple movies we watched for June's Exploitation. He's also in Cozzi's Hercules and Luci Lontane, Distant Lights, the Italian horror, the Thomas Milan fucking an alien movie.
Nice.
He's also in another movie I just actually watched before recording today, which is a late 80s Diodato film called Dial Help that I'm going to add to our list.
Really?
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It's about a killer phone.
Okay.
And it's ridiculous.
Well, now you guys know the pick for next episode.
No, I mean, I added to the list. I don't know when we'll get to it. It's pretty low in numbers, so I'm not worried about like getting to it right away. But cool. Yeah. Actually, I might need to have you watch it first and have you agree that, yes, we should cover this.
I have a few of those too. Yeah.
Because I watched it and I was like, God, she's so fucking dumb. But it's also, the movie is so fucking absurd. It's like, I think I love it, but I really don't know. So I need, this is going to be one where you're going to have to view it before we formally decide.
I'll get the final say.
Okay. So that's for the cast and crew. We will get into our thoughts about the film right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
When I introduced this movie at the end of The Passing, mm-hmm. I think I warned you, and I think I probably warned listeners too, that there are a lot of dragging and lull points in him just sort of wandering around. And I feel like I remember this dragging a lot more for me the first time I watched it a couple of years ago. But for whatever reason, it didn't feel like that for me at all this time when I watched it. So I'm curious if you felt that way about it, or if it didn't drag for you, or it was just maybe that one point where he's just wandering around trying to find the antique shop.
Yeah. Well, that's the actual scene that I wanted to point out about what was the composer's name? Franco Persante. Yeah. That really showcased his music, because that scene is literally 5 minutes of him, you know, second on the right, then left, then the right again, then second on the left. It's just him driving around.
Then getting out of the car, looking at the map. And getting back in the car and then driving around and then hitting a dead end. And
so I loved that scene the first time I watched it. I was like, I mean, I made a note, like, LOL, like this scene of him trying to find this antique shop is the best. And I am getting sick of it, but I want it to go longer because I want to see how long this goes. But I did. I watched it the first time I watched it. First off, the whole setup is intriguing. Like the whole the secret that like really doesn't give many clues. It's like very deliberate when introducing and what's actually happening here. But I did find it to be boring because the murders and the kills are kind of spread out.
Very, very spread out. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of talking, but it's just kind of world building, you know, giving you backstories. Not really giving you a backstory, though, because you don't really get a good explanation in this movie till you're about 45 minutes in, where they start throwing out like what I mean, you kind of get what Professor Whitmore, Alan Whitmore is studying, but you don't really understand like it's a very old religion with different people and from all over the country. And they literally call it like an enormous cobweb.
Yeah.
Which they bring up spiders a lot in this.
They do.
I could see it being a little boring for some people. I love like mysteries and type of, you know, trying to figure out things, even when the clues are so like sparse and hard to find, like in the spider labyrinth.
Yeah.
I did quickly watch it again before I came over.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it did. It wasn't slow for me at all. Like, I think once you know what you're getting into and once you know how it ends,
yeah,
you're like, oh, okay, I can't wait to get there. But I wasn't really bored at all for the second time.
Yeah. I feel like first time watched, a lot of people will probably be like, yeah, the ending's great. But then, yeah, rewatch, I was like, this movie is quick. It's an hour and 20 something minutes, 22, I think. It goes a lot quicker the second time you watch it. And it's been a long time since the last time I watched it too, like a couple of years. So yeah, it didn't feel like that at all. I think what you're talking about as far as setting everything up, it really spends its time like just giving you nothing for a while. And then here's a little bit, and then here's a kill. And then here's another little bit. And then more nothing.
Yeah. You start off with the introduction, which was like two kids playing hide and seek.
Yeah.
And one kid goes into like an old wardrobe. And the other kids that's, I guess, trying to find him, sees him go in the wardrobe. So he locks it and he's like, yeah, you're locked in there. And then that's when the first stop motion spider pops up.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the part of the intriguing setup, but it doesn't really explain any of that really.
Yeah. I have that exact note. I'm like, okay, so it sets up, because we find out later that the kid who gets trapped in the wardrobe was Whitmore.
Is, yeah.
And they never really explore his arachnophobia. Like every now and then he'll have a flashback and like shudder, but that's kind of it. So yeah, they never, it's like, why was that there? I don't care, because I got to see a stop motion spider.
Well, that was my other question too, is like, okay, so why use a stop motion spider in this scene? Because all it does is literally do what a real spider would do, which is just crawl. I'm all, maybe the actors were scared, or?
I mean, it was, yeah, and it's just a tarantula sized spider. It wasn't like a gigantic one, like we get later. But like, there's no reason for it to be stop motion, but it's like, yay.
I guess to stay consistent. Cause yeah, I mean, when you see that, it does make the movie all more endearing and like, ooh, I hope I get more of that. It's not just a hairy tarantula, but yeah, that whole intro is really weird. And then, like you said, then it dives into Whitmore and, I think they're in Dallas. They said, right.
Yeah,
he's from Dallas.
They're in Dallas. Yeah.
And he's going to go to Budapest to go see Professor Roth. So it jumps into this weird, like, okay, why is he going there? Because the chancellor and the people that are sending him there are discreet and not giving him details on purpose. So we're kind of, you know, as the viewer, we're in the dark as well, as much as Whitmore, but you do get these little, you know, these little Easter eggs of, mainly it's the people that are in Budapest in the town. So the very first one that I noticed was when he goes to see Roth. You know, that's always that whole scene's weird.
Yeah,
because Roth's kind of out of his mind. But then Genevieve, Roth's assistant, takes Whitmore to the hotel, and as soon as they come up to the door, this old couple walks out, and the camera just kind of zooms in and holds on them for a while, and then it just cuts away, and you're like, okay, what the fuck's that about? And then later in the movie, they're eating at the hotel and it's really zooming in on people eating and looking at their reaction, you know, staring at Whitmore and at Genevieve eating, showing their reaction. So you realize the town's in on some sort of secret. There's this hive mind mentality. To me, that's when I started feeling like, okay, this might have some sort of Lovecraft effect, like some Lovecraft story. Like they're all in some secret. We'd already seen our first murder. I think, at that point.
Yeah. So when he goes back, and then after that, they go have dinner after he sees Roth get killed, and he's hung, and then there's like spider webs everywhere.
Yeah. And then that black ball, there's a weird, odd black ball. But yeah, the scene where they're eating, people are literally like, you just hear, you know, the clanging of the silverware on the plates. It's very like kind of eerie, and mm-hmm. zooming in on kids, like looking at him, and they all stand up and then just leave the hotel while he's talking about Roth. Yeah. No, there are weird, I mean, there's really cool things like that to pick up, but I think you pointed out with the first watch, I think people could be a little bored with what's happening mm-hmm. If they're not feeling this very vague mystery that's being presented.
Especially when, like, death after death, you get these, like, black bocce balls, and you're like, what the fuck is with the bocce balls?
Did you play bocce as a kid?
No, I did not.
You did it? I mean, that's good. That's a good callback. We used to play bocce. We'd take it camping. My dad had a bocce ball set. And we played washers and horseshoes, but bocce was fun.
I feel like I have played it in my life, but it wasn't, like, a thing I did growing up.
Right. We played bocce when we went camping. That's what I said. We went tent camping, so it wasn't glamorous or anything like that.
No glamping?
No. But yeah, the bocce ball, which we find out later, is hiding something inside.
Yeah, I mean, we can say what it is now, I feel like.
Okay, you guys ready? We're going to start talking about the movie. Yeah, there's this bocce ball that makes a couple of appearances, usually with the kills. They're mm-hmm. popping around. And then when it kills the old man on the underground, that's when it first opens up for the first time.
Yeah, so you see it for all the kills. Like, at first it gets thrown into the professor's, Professor Roth's window, and Whitmore actually sees it, and he's like, what the fuck? And he's about to go pick it up. And then the quote unquote wife is like, hey, he's fine, you got to go. And so he doesn't pick up the bocce ball. And then I don't remember if there was a bocce ball when Maria got killed.
I think there was. I think because she's in that weird room full
with
of
all
sheets.
The sheets everywhere.
Yeah, very Argento. With like the gel lighting. Mm-hmm. But I think before she starts, you start kind of hearing the really eerie sound that this female creature makes throughout the whole movie.
Right.
I think down like in the middle of the room, in the hallway, there was the bocce ball rolling down.
Yeah.
I want to say that was in that scene.
I think so I couldn't quite nail the name of the sound. At first I was like, it's an elephant crossed with an eagle. And then I was like, no, there's a little bit of toad in there. And then the last time I heard it, I was like, no, there's also a rooster in there too.
Yeah. I mean, I my first one was a rabid cat. That was my first note.
Okay.
It was kind of like, and then when I watched it shortly ago, I have dying bird on here.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of like clicking and snapping going on. It's just really gross.
Yeah.
The whole sound editing.
Also like this croaking.
There's a gargle.
I
mean, the whole sound editing I noticed along with the score, which I thought was strong, but the sound editing, specifically those creature kill scenes, the witch kill scenes, are fucking awesome. Hats off to the sound person.
So, we're saying like the witch kill scene. So basically, whenever someone gets killed, it starts with the bocce ball, which we don't see open up until the fourth death, I think.
Yeah.
And then you hear the dying bird sound, and then the witch appears, and she is just this haggard, pointy teeth.
Kind of Nosferatu looking teeth
in
a weird way. But instead of just two, there might be like four.
I mean,
they're very separated.
Yeah. And she shows up and is just like, and you don't necessarily see all of the deaths happen. You don't see Professor Roth actually get hanged. You just show up after the fact.
Right.
Maria's death, though, she's running through the sheets. There's all that lighting, and she gets stabbed through the sheets, and then the blood is running down the front of the sheets.
And she's like dragged. I mean, again, with the sound editing, like that stab, it's like, I wonder how they got that sound effect, like what they did, because it was real, just, ugh, like it sounded really gross.
It sounded like it real. Like, yeah, Scream should take fucking note. I hate the fucking stab sounds in Scream.
I can't even remember what they are. They just like,
the stab sound is so fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's so loud.
Yeah, no, this was good. What movie was it? Oh, it's Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
When they did the stabbing scene in the shower
mm-hmm.
with Janet Leigh, I think they used it was in that 7852 or 5278 doc.
Uh-huh.
I think they used a watermelon or a cantaloupe or something, that, and they just stabbed and pulled out and stabbed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what, that works.
That works. Don't fuck with the original. Don't make your, like...
Don't make it like an anime, like, oh my God, I'm inside. But yeah, back to the murders. I mean,
yeah,
Maria's sorry. The hotel employee. I think every kill kind of outdoes it, the next one, which
yes.
is really, really fun because you don't see Roth, like you said, then Maria. Then I guess there's the antique dealer
yeah.
that's killed, which he's just kind of thrown around like a rag doll just to kind of show this witch's like superhuman strength,
yeah.
I guess.
I think you're right, though. I think they're definitely escalating.
Yeah, because he gets killed with a knife and he's stabbed and with so much force that he's, you know, hung to the wall,
mm-hmm.
you know, like Bob Sims in the original Halloween when
yeah.
he's killed. Then the old guy gets killed.
Exposition homeless man.
Yeah, he's killed. And I love his because that showcases the witch spitting out the web.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like she slobbers like a xenomorph, like just spitting this web goop
yeah.
all over him. And it retracts and turns into a web and it hangs him. That whole scene, because he's like down where he lives. He's like underground, like
yeah,
in tunnels.
He's in like underground tunnels. And like what I love about that too is, you know, he meets up with Whitmore and he, you know, exposition dump.
yeah.
And then they go their separate ways. Whitmore is trying to like get out and exposition man gets killed by the, you know, spit killed. And Whitmore is just like bumbling around and he comes into this like one like opening. There's dead bodies everywhere.
Yeah.
There's like one hanging out of a VW Beetle
yeah.
and like
it yeah. was like a big that scene was badass. I love that whole underground dead pit, like a
yeah.
like a cemetery. And but also what's really cool is before he dies, she starts, you know, popping and snapping, like you know
mm-hmm.
she's coming.
Yeah.
And she's basically floating like Angela, Night of the Demons.
That's, so yeah, she
I'm like, oh my God, fuck yes.
Oh, and this is where we get the first bocce ball actually opening up too.
Yeah, the bocce ball rolls up and then it pops open. And what's in it?
It's an adorable little spider.
It's a stop motion spider. Yes. You know, it just kind of crawls out and boom. It's very, that seems very also alien, reminiscent
yeah.
of the facehugger egg. But then I think the best kill, and the, you know, we're just going through the kills
yeah.
here. Was when Whitmore kills the witch.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that's when she lets out the worst sounds you've ever heard in your life. Like I literally, like the first time I watched it, I clicked back. You know, I had to listen to that again because they're very unbelievably bad. Like she's gurgling and then sounding like a dying bird.
Yeah.
But he stabs her with he crashes through something and he grabs a shard of broken glass
mm-hmm.
and just stabs it right underneath her. Her like chin, like her jawline, and just,
and then it's
like, oh God. so much beauty.
Yes. Yeah. After, you know, on this rewatch, I had very initially, I was like, I like this movie. It's fun. You know, it's got a great ending,
yeah.
you know, good hidden gem in Italian horror. And rewatching it, I was like, yeah, it really one of my favorites of late 80s Italian horror. But there is one like, issue that definitely sticks out to me as like, I guess it's not really an issue. It's more of like a plot point. So it's not really like a big deal. But when Whitmore has sex with Genevieve, he's already been clued in, like the cop picked him up and he saw like the spider scar on his wrist. And so he already knows, he's like, okay, spider scar, bad.
Right. Yeah. Everybody who has a spider scar is basically
on the whole thing,
which seems to be the whole town. Yeah.
Right. So he goes back to his hotel room. Genevieve comes in and they have sex. And I'm like, motherfucker, you did not check her for a spider scar. Like at that point you can trust no one. And
yeah. But he, in his defense,
he's a man.
Thinking like a man here. You know, he spent about 4 hours, probably 8 hours looking for this antique dealer shop. Like he's tired. And, you know, he lays down in her place. He does think, because he had already confided, I think, you know, about that artifact that he had found with mm-hmm. her. I think he had some sort of trust established, and he kind of lays down on her bed and she just starts taking her clothes off. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, this guy, she starts climbing all over him and then she starts spitting the goop on his body, which he doesn't see, or maybe he does and doesn't mind.
No kink shaming over here.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean,
so, but she also, and again, not shaming, like if you're an exhibitionist, sure. But like, yeah, she does not put her blinds down when she's getting changed. Like she wants him to see.
And see, he did.
Yes.
Yeah. She goes full frontal and does some funny kind of, it's kind of scary the way she's like staring and smiling out the window. At him, kind of like, inviting him, like, I dare you. Let's, come and get this.
Yeah.
Very sinister. But yeah, he gets it.
Okay. That's fair.
But yeah, this, like you said, this is a very good straight up Italian horror. Yep. And it does have a lot of the horror, Italian horror tropes that we love so much. Like
nonsense.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that's been established, right? Everything in this feels like a dream.
Yeah.
And you can start from, how it looks, with that classic hazy kind of dreamlike filter or camera look.
It's got that. I know it's been called the supernatural giallo. I wouldn't call it that.
Right.
There are like some elements, like Whitmore is visiting a foreign place. Like you get that a lot in giallo, especially like the cosmopolitan ones.
But, and then like the random close-ups of just passersby and stuff. But who the killer is kind of.
Yeah. Quick. And it's a cult. Like murder mystery. I'm not going to argue with someone about it, but I just wouldn't call it that, I guess.
I wouldn't either. I think it's more of a, like a creature feature kind of like,
especially when we see the end and you're like, oh, this is what we've been waiting for.
Yeah. I mean, but more on that Italian stuff, it's like the conversations are very weird and precise and make you feel like you're either just woke up from like a deep sleep or still in a dream, or like you just did a lot of drugs, because they're otherworldly, like how they talk.
Yeah.
To where it's almost disorienting. Like you're like, this isn't real, because especially because Alan Whitmore does most of the talking in this, but he does stuff like when he goes to see Professor Roth, then he leaves and he comes back that evening. And at that point, Professor Roth is dead, hung by the spider web. And there's a police captain or inspector there, and he's like, do you have your passport? And Alan's reply was like, I don't know, maybe. What's going on? What's wrong with the professor? It's just like his emotion jumps from 1 to 10. I'm like, okay, this is Italian. And then of course you have growling cats.
Yeah,
you have to have
every movie.
They're the guard cats. That's what. And it also has an antique dealer
and a creepy kid.
So that the whole scene with the kid, I mean, there's a lot of scenes that to me are just there to be weird.
Yeah.
So the kid on the swing who pops up throughout the movie, and all he does is he stares like an idiot just at whoever's around. Like, huh, what? There's like no meaning for him. And then Mrs. Coon, who is in charge of the hotel.
Right.
She talks about her dead son in the attic.
Yeah. I assume that was him, maybe as a ghost, but he shows up in the end with the cult when they all are like watching.
Is the baby at the end her dead kid?
Ooh, I didn't think about that.
I just thought of that right now. Because she
was, why you're on the podcast.
It was an infant, like cradle that she was, rocking.
Right.
I didn't think that. Because at first I thought the kid on the swing. Because as soon as he arrives to Budapest and he walks into Professor Roth's office or building, the kid's there on the swing just giving him like this dumb stare.
And like, stink eye. Like,
yeah, it's very like, what are you doing here? Yeah. But, very dim-witted at the same time. And at first I was like, okay, is he like one of the ghosts? Is he like one of the kids from the hide and seek? I was trying to tie things together. Again, this is a straight up Italian horror, which is what I love about it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's all that nonsense stuff that you had mentioned. Like, you need to have that in order for it to work.
Yeah, for sure. If you start making too much sense, then it actually loses some of its appeal, I think.
Yeah, no sense makes sense.
Have anything else before we get to the ending?
No, I mean, I think that's all that's left to talk about.
Yeah, all right.
Fucking ending.
So Alan gets captured by cult people and dragged into, it almost looks like an operating room.
Yeah.
Like it's an underground operating room, and he gets tied down, and all those townspeople that are in on it have surrounded him. They all have their spider scars. And then
included people that were killed too, right? Because I know that Sylvia Roth was there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's these doors closed in front of an altar on the wall in front of them.
Yes.
And
I get giddy just so thinking
good.
About it.
It's just so fucking great. Like when that starts, like it's so good. Lance, it's your,
I mean,
you
I
go for it.
You can't really explain it. You have to see it. And it takes the movie from, I mean, if, for whatever reason, you're bored with the story or how this is turning out.
Yeah.
This makes it the best, I don't know, what it might be like 3 or 4 minutes long, but it's some of the best effects in movie history. Because it's bad. You know, it's definitely endearing, and it still has a lot of that stop motion, like you just opened up Pee-wee's fridge in his playhouse, like that whole feel.
Yeah.
But it's this baby who's kind of floating there, and it looks like it's kind of alien-like. It's kind of gray skinned, and obviously it doesn't look right. but it starts like hemorrhaging on its sides, and huge spider legs are popping out.
Yeah, it's very, very The Thing.
The Thing. Yeah, the Carpenter's Thing. Because I mean, there's scene. His head, you know, it does the whole, it's yelling and crying and screaming and the head and the neck's tearing apart, just like in The Thing.
Exactly like that,
and the head pops up and it's severed, but it's like part of the spider. And the top of the baby head turns into the spider. Like he bends down and he has like a little hairy leg.
It's like a tarantula face on the top
with the
head.
Pinchers on it. It was, it's so much. And at the same, as this is happening, Alan's still strapped down. And Genevieve cuts his arm, and that too is like stop motion.
Yeah,
it looks like
the cut in his arm is stop motion. I was like, you really had to do that.
It was like, this is too much. And a stop motion spider crawls in and goes into his wound, and then he gets that spider scar.
Yeah.
But that whole scene is like walking into a Spirit of Halloween shop with all these animatronic babies yelling and crying. You have to see it to believe it. I mean, it's on YouTube. I wouldn't suggest just skipping ahead, but if you want to, skip it ahead because you're going to want to.
Yeah. I mean, if you're 30 minutes in and you're like, all right, I'm not into this at all. I'm done. At least skip to the last like 10 minutes or so just
for
to
sure.
see this.
Yeah. Because, exactly. That whole scene makes the entire movie. I mean, because as I was watching it, I mean, we'll get to ratings, but I'll just spoil my ratings right now. I was like, okay, this is 3 stars. Maybe I'll give it a heart. But when that kicked up, I was like, my rating's going up without a doubt. Yeah. And that isn't the actual full ending.
No.
We have more.
Yes.
It's an abrupt stop. And he's back in Dallas.
Yep.
What happens, Erica? I told him about the baby.
Yeah. So the people who sent Alan over to Budapest in the first place, he meets up with them. And it turns out that Professor Roth had actually mailed all the documents that they needed in the first place to them, and they got it the day after Alan had left, which sucks for him. So one guy that I think he's a priest because I think he had a collar on. He goes to retrieve the Polaroids of this like text that they need to decipher or something like that.
Right.
Again, it's not all this. The InTextus project is not very clear about what it is. Anyway, priest leaves the room to go get some stuff, leaving Alan in the room with these two other guys. When the priest comes back, he finds those two men just eviscerated. They're torn to shreds.
Slaughtered.
They're dead. And then you see Alan, and then he turns around, and then he's got the witch face now.
He does. He has that whole Nosferatu teeth, and that ending, and that's how it stops. The credits are on that face.
Freeze frame.
Which I love. It felt very Hammer film to me.
Yeah.
That whole like, okay, they're dead. Us as the viewer knows who killed them, but then da, 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 he just pops out and he's got this goofy teeth, you know? And that's it.
I love it.
Great ending. I mean, both endings, like they could have ended, well, they did end on one of them, but ending on the baby could have been enough. But
instead they're
like, let's take it to the next
one. They're level. Like, no, you should be afraid back in Dallas because the spider cult it's web has expanded. It's catching more bugs and flies.
One thing I didn't point out, but when they were walking around, you know, on that whole underground like cemetery area, a fake bat flies by.
Yes, Did you catch that? I do love the fake bats.
I thought that had to be pointed out, and I figured, oh, okay, this is why I could pick
it. Yeah, any movie with fake bat, I'm going to pick it. Fake spiders, fake bats, picked.
Oh, yeah, this one's on the list. This one's got the best of that. That's so good.
So you already spoiled your rating or whatever, 3.5 on it. I have the same. My first time watch, it was a 3 with a heart. But like rewatch, I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, 3.5. This movie fucking rules. So
yeah,
I would definitely recommend it. Double feature pick, Lance.
Okay, so, you know, I watched it twice. And this really reminded me of a new film I watched during South by Southwest. It was called, I watched it this year. It was called Off Season. It was directed by Mickey Keating. It's kind of a very muted Lovecraftian horror. It was a decent time. I would say seek it out. I think it's worth seeing. I'm not sure if it's released yet, but when I was watching that, I wanted to watch another Lovecraft horror. And that's my pick. And it's Stuart Gordon's Dagon.
Ah, from nice.
2001. Yeah. One of our guests actually picked this for
Daniel Cobwebs.
Daniel Upward from Cobwebs Podcast. He picked this for Never Take Sweets from a Stranger.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's a cool double feature recommendation. But
absolutely.
This one, like I had mentioned before, this has very much H.P. Lovecraft inspiration, I felt, especially from that his novella, The Shadow Over Innsmouth, which is what Dagon's about or driven from. But like Spider Labyrinth, it hits on the whole town sharing a secret, in this case, worshiping a powerful creature named Dagon.
Mm-hmm.
And there are similar characters, you know, that kind of explain the backstory that are just there. I think it's another old man that's like drunk and in the rain. And, you know, they kind of urge the protagonist to leave town. But the main similarities is that hive mind mentality and keeping a dark centuries old secret from outsiders.
Yeah.
And there's some similarities. There's like a love connection. There's a lot of nudity. There's boobies and nakedness. And the ending has some similarities too, just to spoil Dagon for everybody, but you know, where the secret is essentially kept hidden from the outside world. But it's streaming on YouTube. Just about like every other Stuart Gordon film, I totally recommend it if you haven't seen it.
Except Space Truckers.
Well, I haven't seen that yet, but
I don't recommend that one.
No Space Truckers.
No to space. I love Stuart Gordon, but that movie, hard no.
Okay. I'll be sure to watch it.
Of course you and you're like,
challenges accepted. What'd you pick for yours?
All right. So I am doing a Along Came a Spider double feature. And my pick is actually also a hint about something that we have planned for August, which I'm not going to spoil yet.
Mysteries.
Yes.
If y'all can figure it out before August, you get a free magnet.
Okay. So my pick is a movie from 1976 called Web of Death. This is a Shaw Brothers martial arts movie. So it may not seem to fit, but I mean, Web of Death, you should already be on board.
Yeah.
It stars Lo Lee as the leader of the snake sect. And he is trying to get his hands on a weapon, which the spider sect has, which is an artifact that has a spider in it. And it's got like a tarantula in it.
A real one.
In some parts, it is a real one. In others, I'm pretty sure it's rubber. but the spider, when you actually open the artifact thing, they have to keep it locked up because it's super deadly. So if you open it up and use it against your enemies, the spider emits a deadly gas, which kills you instantly by melting your face off.
Spider farts.
Yeah. it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, clan leaders shooting lasers from their hands. There's an acid moat. There's a centipede sword. It's got great Shaw Brothers sets. And the tarantula, when it actually, I'm kind of spoiling it, but you have to see it. So not really spoiler. But at the end, when it gets used, it comes out. And it's just a tarantula, but it like gets up and it puts its two front legs up. Mm-hmm. And I actually looked at Laird's review, and his review was like, yeah, okay, I thought the same thing as him. I'm almost positive they dubbed the tarantula with an elephant. Yeah.
It gives out an elephant roar.
Yeah. It's like a
respect.
Yeah. So I would play Labyrinth first and like have everyone just be like, what the fuck at the ending, and then have the roll right into this.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't do an order for mine. I would say end with Spider Labyrinth.
I think that's,
yeah.
People are going to be walking out of the theater like, oh my God. all right. So that is it for Spider Labyrinth.
Good pick.
What's our next pick, Lance?
Oh, it's my pick.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm back on my bullshit with Swedish Horror.
Oh, that's not bullshit.
It's not, but I think this is the third one. And this pick is probably a little more thriller than horror, but I'm following through with it because It's rare that you find a film that has under 1,000 views, which has an all-star cast like this one.
Oh, shit.
And when I say all-star cast, I mean a Swedish all-star cast.
Oh, okay. Wait, can I guess one then?
Yeah.
Max von Sydow?
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
So my pick is The Night Visitor from 1971.
Oh, okay. I think this is on my watch list.
It is. I actually saw it on your watch list. It's been on my watch list too. So, you know, as I was trying to come up with some picks, I watched a few of them on my watch list. Mm-hmm. And this one, I was like, okay, how many views does this have? And that's another reason why I'm picking this like right away, because it's sitting at like 829 views on Letterboxd. So I wanted to sneak this in before it gets to the 1,000, because I think it definitely deserves it. I mean, Letterboxd is just like, it's not really a measure of, you know, a film's popularity.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people use Letterboxd. But I feel like once we record this podcast, or once this movie gets out,
yeah,
it's going to balloon up. Because it is, okay, I'm not going to get into it. But
okay.
So this film stars Max von, you say Sydow?
I say Sydow.
Sydow. I say Sydow. But
I used to say Sydow.
I mean, okay, but Max von Sydow, I can go with that. Liv Ullmann, who is a regular in all of Ingmar Bergman's.
Okay.
She's like a go-to actress.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, get this. Per Oskarsson, who played Lundgren in Vakstaken, he has a huge role in it. And it also has like Trevor Howard, Rupert Davies, and Andrew Keir. But it's directed by Laszlo Benedek. And it's about a farmer named Salem, who's played by Sydow, who escapes from an insane asylum in order to get revenge on the people who committed him. Mm. And that's really all I want to say about it, because it's fun to kind of just go in with as little as you know possible. There are some grisly murders, but this film really is about the cast and the performances. I think the story is great all on itself. But The Night Visitor is streaming on YouTube, and there are a few versions out there on YouTube.
Okay.
There's one that's just, you know, first off, it's all in English. There's no subtitles or anything. All the actors are speaking in English. But and there's one that's just the English version. The quality on that one, I started watching, it looked a little rough. But there is a version out there that I thought had the best quality. It has Spanish subtitles on the bottom.
That's fine.
Yeah, easy to ignore. And the other one, the voices weren't, the audio wasn't lining up. So I recommend that. There is a Blu-ray release out there too, but I've read some reviews where the transfer isn't so great. So YouTube it, The Night Visitor. Yeah, excited to talk about this one.
Sweet. Is there a write-up on that in Daniel's book?
It's not. It's not. I guess it's,
oh, it's considered not a sensations film.
Yeah.
Okay. What year is it? 80?
71.
71.
So it definitely fits in, you know, to his, I think it started with Arnie Madsen's That One Summer of Happiness in 62 or 63. But I did look, actually, after I watched it.
I
was like, it's not in there, but it's a great film. I mean, I'm already gushing about it.
Yeah, you are. Save it. Save it for next episode.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. I'm looking forward to that. Get to check something off my watch list that was already there. All right. If you are not already, you can give us a follow on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Slasher, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Letterboxd under the username Also Watched. And I actually have personal Instagram and Twitters now because I switched my other podcast over to personal accounts. So that is at Hex Massacre. And I had one person ask, so in case you're curious, Hex Massacre is an alternate title for the movie Who Can Kill a Child.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. Because I didn't want to do Who Can Kill a Child as my handle, because I didn't want to get flagged by Instagram. Because I just figured that would happen if I did that. So
anyway. I'm reporting Hex Massacre.
Lance, where can people follow you?
Twitter, Letterboxd, Instagram. I'm L Shivey.
What else? Do you got pins for sale?
Yeah, I still have some pins for sale.
Okay.
Hit me up at lanceshivey.bigcartel.com. a lot of director pins. Shop it. Get it for your favorite person, which could be yourself. So
yeah, absolutely. Thanks for listening to us talk about another Italian horror movie. I promise there will be more in the future because that's where I live.
Yes.
And if you haven't already, go back and check out our Junesploitation bonus episodes. It's a fucking beast of 3 hours of...
That was an endurance test.
nearly 100 movies that we watched during Junesploitation. Lots of recommendations, lots of deep cuts. Be sure to check that out. And we will see you back here in 2 weeks for The Night Visitor.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Night.